Good afternoon, Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220. And good afternoon to you, Tom.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's, you know, we're the second week two of the 1 p.m. slot, and learning that pre-production can happen in 5 minutes or less.
You know what? I find it a little more fun that way. A little adventurous, if you will.
It keeps you motivated. No more 1 hour prep time. Big week in America and abroad. Margaret Thatcher left us. Longtime political figure in England and here also. You know, with Ronald Reagan and whatnot. And also, I was on the internet last night, which I do occasionally. Saw a headline, and you might have saw this also. It said, Mork and Mindy star dies.
A little shocking.
A little shocking. I thought, really? Did Robin Williams or Pam Dauber? I mean, this can't be. No, Jonathan Winters dies. Mork and Mindy star dead at age 87. In case you didn't know, Jonathan Winters played Mirth, Mork's son, in like 5 episodes of Mork and Mindy. So to call him the star of Mork and Mindy might have been a stretch, and I think that got a lot of hits on the Comcast homepage last night. But just a little bit here on Jonathan Winters, who died Thursday at age 87 in his Monticello, California home, was a pioneer of the improvisational stand-up comedy with an exceptional gift for mimicry, a grab bag of eccentric personalities, and a bottomless reservoir of creative energy. Facial contortions, sound effects, tall tales, all could be summoned in a matter of seconds to get a laugh. Johnny Carson, in particular, lifted Winters' Maud Frickett character. Do you remember this? I think this appeared in Scooby-Doo also for us Generation Xers here who recall Jonathan Winters' memorable two-part episode in Scooby-Doo. Maud Frickett came out almost intact for a long-running Aunt Blabby. That was Carson's version of Maud Frickett, a character he portrayed on Tonight Show. Robin Williams introduced Winters to millions of new fans in 1981 as a son of the Williams goofball alien and his earthling wife in the final season of Mork and Mindy. Was looking for a good little blurb of Mirth, and looking through 22 episodes of Mork and Mindy was not part of the plan this week, but I did find a little promo of Robin Williams giving us a little teaser of what the year was going to be. And that's Robin Williams getting ready to tell us that.
Interesting.
Okay. Did the audio? Okay. Well, the audio didn't work. That's part of the magic of live radio.
Every now and again, that happens.
We'll go back to that later. Second big story: Mousketeer Annette Funicello, comfortable being herself. And again, much like Jonathan Winters was introduced to Generation Xers and alike as the lovable character Mirth, Annette Funicello was known to us as the lovable mom on the Skippy peanut butter commercials that she played from 1979 to 1987. Do we have the Annette Funicello audio ready? Let's play that.
That hiking makes you hungry, Alex.
I'll say.
Looks like you're really enjoying that Skippy peanut butter sandwich.
Tastes great.
Guess Mom packed it because Skippy's nutritious.
Nutritious?
Your mom knows, ounce for ounce, Skippy has more protein than a hot dog, chicken salad, even liverwurst. And Skippy has no cholesterol. What is it you like best about hiking?
Lunch.
For good nutrition, it's hard to beat Skippy and Skippy Old Fashioned.
I don't think it was that long ago that we went by the four food groups and liverwurst and hot dogs. We chose between that or a peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, I definitely remember my mom always telling me about the comparisons between peanut butter and liverwurst, which really cemented my love of peanut butter.
It's a constant conflict I have every night between the protein and peanut butter, and no cholesterol either. So
she looks pretty good in that ad.
She does look pretty good in that ad.
Not too shabby.
Unfortunately, so notwithstanding a smattering of guest spots on this episodic television and variety shows, and an appealing series of commercials for Skippy peanut butter, Annette in a casual motherly mode. Her career proper lasted only a decade after her 1960s beach bomb era. Her brand was not made to survive the culture wars of the late 60s and early 70s, and one guesses that her stardom did not matter enough for her to scramble to extend it. Annette was happy being herself. A lack of desperation that made her semi-retirement, finally, sealed by her advancing MS, seems gracious and grateful. Very unfortunate. Three major losses here in America and abroad this week.
I think, I watched a little bit of The Mouseketeers back when I was younger, Nick at Night, and I remember Annette Funicello. My dad would swoon every time she came on screen. Loved her to death, but I mostly remember her from, do you remember the movie with Big Kahuna?
Yes, I do.
Why, oh, why, oh, why, oh, did I ever leave Ohio?
Or the 1985 classic Back to the Beach.
That's the one. I think that's the one.
That's right. Which she, with Frankie Avalon, pokes fun at her Skippy peanut butter image. Teenage stars, especially those who come out of television, this is from the LA Times, or whose recording careers are presided over by professional hitmakers, are often unfairly described as manufactured. However many records they sell or live lives they enliven. In the 1990s, Disney's reborn Mickey Mouse Club produced Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and Christina Aguilera. So I guess those to show, every generation has their own Mouseketeer, Annette Funicello. Someday, maybe Britney Spears will do a series of Skippy peanut butter commercials, and we'll remember when she was, what, you know, those fond days of her being a pop star were.
I really feel like she's going to have a lot of work cut out before she becomes Skippy material.
We shall see. We'll see what the next culture revolution is. We have a great show today. I'm very looking forward to my good friend Lindsay Strand, formerly of KSDP and now of Lindsay Strand & Associates, and also photographer and also director of what's the correct title there, Chris?
Director of News Operations.
Director of News Operations of KSDP-TV, Chris Melvitt. We'll both be joining me live here. Let's go to a commercial break. We'll come back with both Lindsay and Chris live. Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB, Club 1220.
This evening in Detroit.
Fight over this controversial power line is a long way.
Are trained to handle emergencies and perform.
Limit the growth in spending in all programs to just 5.
That little movie that doesn't quite succeed, but it doesn't quite.
Enjoy this nice area, slightly cooler and drier air while we have it.
Channel 5, Eyewitness News, the news specialists.
Flashback Twin Cities, KLB, Club 1220. You are listening to the specialist, the news specialist of Eyewitness News, and we have one live in studio, Lindsay Strand. Good afternoon.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. And I'm glad to hear that the growth in spending has been limited to 5% over the next 2-year biennium.
Exactly.
How things change and never do, right? So, Lindsay, you've been off the air now for, it's been a few years. What have you been up to? What have you not been up to?
Oh, well, what I'm doing now actually really grows out of my career in journalism. And I continued to find that after we moved here, we loved having our roots in the Twin Cities and decided that we wanted to remain here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And so out of that, I began a consulting career in helping to coach people on strategic communications and their own personal style, whether it's executives or leaders within organizations, mm-hmm. around crisis issues and also opportunities with all kinds of presentations. And then my husband is a full-time realtor. And
Mike Strand of WCCO-TV.
Yes. WCCO-TV. For our journalism career, we were always competitors.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had the opportunity to work together in real estate. And so Team Strand, because we're together, is where people can go.
You can like it on Facebook, Team Strand.
TeamStrand.com,
right.
Exactly. And that's another face-to-face business. It's a people business. It's competitive like journalism, so it has a lot of those same roots.
Now, you're from Illinois originally, correct?
I am. That's
and
right.
And you worked at the Capitol in Springfield in Illinois for your early part of your career.
That's exactly right. So I had the opportunity to start at the Illinois State Capitol as a reporter, and then working in Illinois for a while. Funny to think about technology, because when we first started, we would be running over every day. We had the top floor of the big Hilton Hotel in town so that we could run up to the top before news time and microwave our stories back to the TV stations in Champaign and Peoria, and how the technology has changed over time. If the weather was bad, you couldn't get a very good signal, and sometimes you'd have to be early enough that if you had to drive the 90 miles, you could do it to get your story over to the station.
And to those listening who don't understand what microwaving means, this is satellite TV in its infamy, really. This is local, you know, local or state media, you know, sending signals across to stations and homes across the cornfield, as we talked about before the show started.
Exactly. So it's literally, you know, that was such leading edge technology. Mm-hmm. And I think people would wonder, well, what is it to microwave a story today? That doesn't even make sense. But
you know, and I want to talk a little bit about your days in Illinois and Channel 5, but I first met Lindsay. I had a tcmedianow.com is where you can find a lot of Lindsay's past work. Did a event at the Minnesota Historical Society called Your 6 O'Clock Friends, and hosted with Jack Stallman, who was here a couple weeks ago. And I didn't know who was going to come to this. I had a few guests I'd lined up, and I thought, well, we'll see. It was a cold February night. We'll see if anyone comes. Had a large – and Chris, you were there too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Large group of former Channel 4, Channel 5, a couple current 11 reporters were there. Great people. And we had this questions and answers form at the end. And these people that I had seen as a younger person and have been seeing on my videos I post at tcmedianow.com, Lindsay here is telling some great stories of being a political reporter as a female in the early 80s and late 70s. Tell me a little bit about entering this world of in journalism, whether it be newspaper, you know, radio, TV. It was a boys' game. It was a good old boys' club.
Well, absolutely. And first, I just have to acknowledge, because we refer to each other as our husband and work wives, but you reference Chris, and Chris Melvitt was my photographer partner for all the years that I was here at KSDP, and you learn in that business that there's one person that really can make or break your reputation, and it's the person that will, you know, help to get you there on time, remember the facts that you might forget, and hopefully, you know, if the lining is out of your dress or something even worse than that's going on, your partner will tell you.
Well, you're very kind.
So Chris is joining us. He can jump in. But in Illinois, I was the first woman, and this was in the 70s, the late 70s, based at the Illinois State Capitol in what was called the TV room, where the reporters from Chicago and downstate would come together all in one room. They didn't have their own private offices. And in that space, the file cabinets were all filled with pornography.
Right, right.
And their big gesture, and this was particularly to keep entertained the Chicago photographers while they were waiting for a story to break so they could sit back there and read that. And then, in fact, their big concession to me was to go out and buy a magazine of men.
Oh.
And they cut out then all of the body parts so that I wouldn't really see anything, so, and gave that to me.
Fair and balanced new entertainment room then, I guess, for everyone. We've got to make sure we have our equal pornography. My guest here, Lindsay Strand.
That should be a tagline.
Yeah, this is good. This is going to be the promo next week. So, and just to point this out, in Illinois, you look at Chicago. Chicago is not all of Illinois. Chicago, which progressive, diverse city, Illinois, outside Illinois, this is back in the 70s, farmers, and maybe not the most accepting, at least at this point. It had not had a lot of women reporters, not a lot of women politicians, for that matter.
Well, isn't that interesting that at that time, the biggest issue in the Illinois State Capitol was ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. Mm-hmm. Illinois was the most northern state that had failed to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. And the little green button that I had posted on the wall there, 59 cents, you know, was women made 59 cents out of every dollar. I think it's gone up now. I know we're into the 70s, and it might be into the 80s, and frankly, in the last 10 or 15 years, I think in business, it's probably in many places been a lot easier to be a woman than a man, frankly. Chris might have some other ideas about that. I don't know, but so interesting times for sure.
And you hold a master's degree in public affairs from the University of Illinois and a BA from Washington University, St. Louis. Did you go into journalism wanting to cover politics?
Well, I actually first went into politics and didn't like representing one person's viewpoint. I worked in Washington, D.C. for a senator from Illinois, and Chuck Percy, who is a Republican and chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. But I didn't like representing one person's viewpoint. And that's really then what led me to journalism, where you could make a difference, you could be involved, you could feel that you were really sharing information for people to make their own decisions.
See, I find today in journalism, it's usually the opposite direction. Usually reporters go into one point of view after leaving journalism. But that trend is
certainly out there.
Took the opposite route. So you came to KSDP in 1982?
1981.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And were you assigned to the political beat right away?
I think that was the intention. But Marcia Fleur, who's been just a fabulous, had a fabulous career Marcia was covering that beat, but the intent was for her to move into some anchor positions, and so they were looking for a backup. Mm-hmm. And so we worked together for a while, and I first started covering the city of St. Paul.
That's great. And Chris was your photographer this whole
Well, and I actually was Marcia's photographer for years at the Capitol as well. So, yeah, in the beginning there was a little bit of just kind of taking Lindsay around and showing her where things were. There's a lot of trying to just figure out where the conference rooms are and meeting a few people and the like.
When I started at KSTP, we had a kind of a newsroom mom, Harriet Sundet, who was there made that presentation. And so when you came as a reporter, you got two things when you checked in, a yellow ashtray and a Rolodex. And I got Lou Harvin's Rolodex.
Both were essentials.
And those were the essentials. Yep. And so there was no thought about if smoking, I mean, I'm sorry to say that, but if smoking was good or bad, it just was.
It was part of the job.
And so those were the two things that you got when you checked in. And then if you were lucky, you got to be able to pair up with somebody, as I did with Chris. And, you know, thinking about the technology with us having that microwave on the top of the studio, and and Chris really helped to pioneer so much of what happened with the technology, with the Newstar equipment, and being able to really see what are the capabilities, you know, of what became then CONUS and now is in the museum in Washington, D.C.
Have you been to the museum? Truck. It's a great place. If you have not been to the museum, I recommend going out there. And they do have the original CONUS truck in the museum on the, I think it's on the first floor. I think you go down there.
Very prominent, I guess.
But the very first truck,
as I like to point out, before there was CONUS, there was KSTP-TV.
And that's right.
KSTP was the one that actually
Newstar 5
developed the technology, had the engineers, had the backing of the Hubbard family, and
a lot of, you know, I've talked to people on here before, and the Hubbards are not in the Museum of Broadcasting because they had a TV station. They're in the Museum of Broadcasting because they've did such, you know, risky at the time, innovative technology.
Very much so.
Sending the satellite into space to create what is today commonplace DSS satellite equipment. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were called crazy. I have many news articles on tcmedianow.com you can read of the local scribes criticizing Hubbard for focusing their energy on all this technology, which is now pretty commonplace. When you drive down even here in Stillwater or anywhere else, there's these satellite dishes hanging out of people's bedrooms.
It is really a hallmark of journalism in Minnesota, the leading foresight of the Hubbard family and the commitment to that technology.
Let's take a little clip here. I have, this is Lindsay Strand covering politics in 1982. We had an election that we didn't have a recount on. This is one of the rare times we actually had elections that were decided election day. This is 1982.
Well, the governor-elect of Minnesota, Rudy Perfect, set up shop back at the state capitol today, and he got right down to business. In fact, his staff at the transition office is at work right at this instant.
Oh, yeah.
And to bring us up to date on what's happening, we're going to go live now to our government specialist, Lindsay Strand, at the state capitol. Lindsay?
Well, Stan, Rudy Perpich had promised he would waste no time in preparing to take over state government, and if today is any indication, he is going to live up to that promise. Since he entered the Capitol at 10 o'clock this morning, Perpich has been in numerous meetings, starting first with Governor Al Quie.
The newly elected governor was all smiles as he headed into his old office with Governor Al Quie. The two met privately for about an hour to discuss the transition, while across the hall, the lieutenant governors were doing the same thing. Quie and Perpich emerged from their meeting to say the state's continuing money problems dominated the discussion. Quie said he expects a new revenue forecast due out in 2 weeks to contradict earlier predictions that the state's economy would start to improve toward the end of this year.
I don't see it out there. We don't have any figures on.
Lindsay's friend reporting live at the Capitol in 1982. You have a great story. I want to go on air. You
well, here's what we were just looking at each other and remembering when he was first elected and we were up on the Iron Range and Rudy had said that he was going to take the doors off at the Capitol and have
every
it be very
be
open.
Yeah.
Every meeting would be open. There was something about he'd made a promise that he was going to run around in his bare feet if he won, and it was we had 12 inches of snow or something at the time. But Chris, pick up the story. So he said he's going to take off the doors. Every meeting will be open.
Well, and there was some meeting that we were invited to with some commissioner, and we had no idea what he was going to be talking to him about. But as I'm in there filming this poor guy, we suddenly realized he was being told he no longer had a job. So it was very open in the beginning, and suddenly I felt very uncomfortable about being there while this poor guy was being told he wasn't going to have a job anymore.
That story ran, and there were no doors taken off at the state capitol by the time we got back down here.
You know, this is an interesting time in history because we've had a couple decades in Minnesota where we didn't have a budget crisis, but this period when you came to Minnesota, it was budget crisis every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the budgets that we were working on, those are peanuts compared to what we're dealing with today. But you had shifting parties. You had one party that was in the executive branch and legislative branch that was split. Same thing we've experienced the last decade, really. So, you know, to the point, it just never changes.
Well, and you know, it's interesting, having over time now observed how people choose to move on after their career in an elected office. You know, Governor Kui really left with a lot of people ridiculing because the state was in such a period of financial crisis and the leadership didn't appear to be that strong. He certainly is an example of a person who has proven himself to be such a remarkable statesman in his time since he was in elected office. The commitment he has to things that he does privately that people don't even know about, counseling and working with the inmates and the Stillwater prisons, for example. Quite a statesman.
Well, in 30 years in Congress before he was governor, and he's been a great, even you know, former Governor Pawlenty, you know, has called him out as being a great mentor as he, you know, when before he came to office, and he's not been afraid to voice his opinion, even though it has not been always popular with his party brethren, if you call it. And he's, I saw a picture of him actually recently. He's still riding horses. I think he's almost 90 years old.
That's
he's
right.
Still, he's still riding horses. And no, I've met him. I met him recently, actually. Great, great guy. We were talking a little about you have a picture here, and I want you to tell me a little bit about this.
Well, I just got such a kick out of this because we're looking at a photograph that was one of the promotional things for the news specialist, one of the marketing strategies for KSTP. And when we start out in each of the pictures. And Cindy Brucato and I are the only two women, but in each of the pictures I have on some manifestation of a tie.
That's right.
And so it could be a little ribbon. I mean, it was bold to make it a tie that had a little brighter color to it, but basically we are kind of covered up everything short of a comforter. And today we've gone through such an incredible evolution. Part of it, I think, is a point where women are more comfortable with what they can wear and really looking at their old style. But it used to be, you know, you kind of cut your hair, you covered up, you didn't wear anything that would be distracting or flashy jewelry, to now my mother says it looks like they're all going to a cocktail party. Interesting research I saw recently here out of the University of Indiana University, co-authoring a study on, well, what does this all mean? You know, there's women are not wearing blazers. Now they're all sleeveless, which I think is the new uniform. And they did a study that said that when women today are wearing bold makeup and clingy clothes, the less likely the male viewers are to remember the news, but they do watch. And that the
interesting.
Yes, they had a 24-year-old anchor read the same news broadcast dressed in two different outfits and evaluate then. The women did retain more of the content from the, you know, than the men did. But it's interesting to see.
Study. So it seems liberating, but it's also kind of a smokescreen, maybe?
Well, it's interesting because I do think we have a point now where you can dress to what would be most attractive for you. But there does clearly, certainly at the national level, seem to be more of a push of, you know, the brighter it is, the tighter it is. And I think, of course, Michelle Obama really did, with her sleeveless clothes, 365 days out of the year, create a new news uniform.
I didn't agree. I'm looking at
only you would bring Michelle Obama looking at as a style.
At this photograph here, and you're wearing, you have two ties. You have a tie on in the, and we're going to work on getting this on tcmedianow.com, but we have a picture of you in the tie on the front picture here, and then on the bottom picture, you're wearing a tie again. So you must have had a tie collection that would rival my own, unless I have to wear one every day. This is great. As a woman reporter, and I don't want to focus on the gender part of reporting, but it is very fascinating. Did you find that some politicians or some subjects that you're covering, did you feel a different attitude when you were asking them questions? You're asking tough questions. You're not doing softball interviews.
Absolutely.
And it was like, who are you to ask me? What are you?
for me, I figured out pretty quickly it was actually an advantage because there weren't a lot of women. And, you know, if that would help you to get further attention, further access, a little more interest within the bounds of what's appropriate, very appropriate.
Well, that gets you back to wearing the ties, doesn't it? I mean, didn't the ties give you some access? That...
Here I am with a scarf on today.
I want to play a clip, and this is from Bob Madsen. And
oh.
Actually, we're not going
to... That's the one I believe that did not work.
Oh, I think that is...
That was number two.
Number two on the... number two. We're doing a little production here on the air here. Number two on the CD did not work?
Nope.
Okay. Then let's play number four here. You went to Honduras, and I believe both people in
the
stream
did. Went
yes,
to Honduras.
We both were there.
And one thing I I'm going to make Chris uncomfortable now because I'm going to bring up something about today's era of news. Local people don't take a lot of international trips any longer, from what I've seen. And I sometimes watch, if I go to the, I watch four different TVs one time if I'm at a fitness center or whatnot and kind of see where people are at. You went to Honduras. There was a lot of controversy going on in Honduras with the American military doing some testing there.
What
or some,
was the American we, military doing? Building those roads, right?
And you both went to Honduras. I want to play the audio here. This is very. This is from 1986.
The terrain is rugged, the region remote, and the reason for the road unclear. The road begins in a small town called Yoro and winds through sparsely populated areas. The project is the largest U.S. military training exercise in Honduras.
I'm getting a lot more done than I've ever done before, because we've never done nothing like this up in Wisconsin.
By the end of the dry season, 100 Minnesotans from the Army Reserve and the National Guard will have joined thousands of others from the Midwest to build this road in central Honduras.
The base camp is 120 miles away from the Nicaraguan border where the fighting is taking place. And as you can see, there are several mountain ranges between here and the Nicaraguan border.
Although far from the conflict, the work goes on under tight security provided by U.S. military and Honduran police.
What are you guarding against here?
Any terrorist action against any foreign or American persons.
Have you had any problems at all?
Not that I know of.
The military says the road is helping the local Hondurans. We saw few natives traveling the road during our visit. But with the help of an army interpreter, this man told us he was happy the road is being built near his home.
Before the road was built, they had to go by mule and horses on the countryside, so now they're able to go on the road.
By next year, the road is scheduled to connect the towns of Yoro.
That's a bold question there. What are you building? What are you doing here?
Who are you protecting?
Has it worked?
I was just thinking about, with Chris, how technology has changed. You know, when you're moving through something like that and trying to be flexible and fluid and move quickly and every... I mean, I would haul the tripod, but really, you hauled everything.
Well, and you were saying that the local stations aren't traveling internationally, and I don't know that I would agree with that. Just KSTP was embedded with the 101st Airborne during the Iraq War. One of the big differences is this was a story we went over, we filmed for several days, videotaped, brought it all back, wrote it, had some time to edit it. With the 101st Airborne, we had satellite phones we were doing live from the battlefield every day.
I have to admit, if I love traveling, but if I was in the newsroom and said, "Hey, Honduras, I have a ticket for you," I might be a little bit skeptical. What was your thought when they said, "Hey, we have a ticket for you to go to Honduras"?